Today's episode of Dog Nation Daily is brought to you by Harris Cherokee Resort. Find us online at caesars.com/harris-cherokee.
Presented by DogNation.com, this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
You know, one of the conversations we had yesterday on the show was about disagreement amongst the talking heads, the commentariat, whatever you want to call it, related to the draft prospects for some of the former UGA players. And sometimes you see that in the media, right? I mean, sometimes this guy's touted as a top 15 pick, but some other outlet calls him a second round pick. You know, disagreement is just kind of part of it. When it comes to a subject like sports, no one's going to see things kind of the same way. Another area in which we recently kind of saw that, we never really talked about it at the time, but it definitely got some attention from some Georgia fans, is very common this time of year to write the who were the winners and the losers related to early entrance into the NFL draft. Juniors, or in 2021's case, you could be also be a, you know, a senior technically and leave early, given the fact you did have eligibility to return for the following year. But the point is, of the guys who left, the programs who had guys leaving, who did okay in this and who didn't do quite so well? And it was interesting to see that some outlets once again had Georgia as kind of a draft declaration loser because of what they lost off last year's roster, and other outlets had Georgia as kind of a draft declaration winner based on who it was that decided to stick around. And, you know, you could listen to the one side and there's some fairly good points. You could listen to the other side. There's some fairly good points on that side as well. And you kind of, as a Georgia fan, were kind of left to process that. I was thinking about that yesterday because Connor Riley wrote a great piece at DogNation.com looking at the release of the preseason SP Plus from Bill Conley, a college football writer who now writes for ESPN. Now, many of you know I'm not very smart. I've never been very good at math, can barely do basic arithmetic. So I am not necessarily the kind of person that you think would be attracted to these, like, math guy, analytics, you know, stuff when it comes to college football. But listen, the truth is I can't get enough college football content, so even kind of the nerdy, dorky, you know, analytic stuff is somewhat attractive to me. And I always kind of look forward to this time of year when the SP Plus, you know, Conley used to do this for another outlet, does it for ESPN now, when it comes out. And when you look a little deeper at the math stuff that Conley put together, you do get a little bit of an understanding for why there was some disagreement about what Georgia lost off its roster from the 2020 season and what it brings back for 2021, and whether that's a net positive or net negative for UGA. And I thought Connor Riley did a really good job of kind of laying all of this out, and I'm going to see if I can kind of explain it all to you, and then I hope you'll go to DogNation.com and read what Connor had to say. First of all, Georgia comes in at number 6 on the preseason ranking, according to SP Plus, Bill Conley there at ESPN. They are behind usual suspects. Alabama's at 1, Clemson's at 2, Oklahoma's at 3, Ohio State's at 4, and then Oregon is just slightly ahead of Georgia at number 5. Oregon does have more returning production for the upcoming year. Georgia's returning production is nowhere near as high. They're down there at like 92nd all the way around, and obviously a lot of that is related to what Georgia lost off its secondary from a year ago. Conley has always weighted returning production in a defensive secondary more so than returning production other places, so Georgia gets really dinged for returning production overall by the fact that it brings back so little from its secondary. So those who were looking at what Georgia lost in terms of juniors moving on the NFL draft, in a way, were accurate to say, yeah, Georgia's hurt by that because compared to the other, you know, top, you know, contenders for college football here in 2021, Georgia will have less secondary depth. That's been proven to matter. I'm going to take that seriously for the upcoming season. I think the goal for Georgia is not to have, you know, 4 or 5 All-Americans back in the defensive secondary, but just find a group that can be competent, find a group that can help get the job done. You know, you don't have to be great there, but the fact that you did lose a DJ Daniel, you did lose an Eric Stokes, you did lose a Tyson Campbell, certainly a Richard LeCount, you know, the idea that Georgia will feel the effects of that somewhat here this upcoming season is obviously, I think, an idea that you have to take seriously. But while Georgia is kind of hurt by lost productivity on defense, they are helped by the fact that Zamir White's coming back, that JT Daniels is coming back, that a lot of those guys on offense coming back, so much so that the preseason projection specifically for the Georgia offense, based on who's returning this upcoming season, is 15th. And obviously, given the fact that in most years, Georgia coach Kirby Smart has put together a great defense to be preseason number 15 as far as offense goes, obviously suggests that Georgia has a real chance to do some big things this upcoming season. So that's kind of the picture of Georgia right now. What they've lost defensively, maybe a little bit of an anchor on the preseason projection, but what they have a chance to do offensively obviously keeps Georgia in the middle of that national championship conversation, and I think that's really interesting, even if it's kind of somewhat the opposite of what some of these preseason projections have been the last couple of years. But here's the real point I want to make on all of this. Because as you kind of go more deeply into this, obviously Georgia, from an analytics standpoint, starts the year as a real legitimate national championship contender. And as we've said before, one of the things I think that aids Georgia in its pursuit of a title this year is the fact that, listen, by SEC standards, what Georgia's getting ready to play would appear to be a very manageable schedule. Your crossover opponent this year is not Alabama anymore. You know, you're playing Arkansas, which you also played last year, but you don't have that big SEC West crossover game. In fact, Georgia only has two regular season opponents in the preseason top 25 of Bill Conley's SP Plus. As I just told you, Clemson comes in at number 2 on that list, and then Florida comes in at number 12. That's the only two top 25 opponents based on this preseason projection that Georgia is slated to play. The next closest team would be Auburn there at number 28, according to Bill Conley. And it's important to kind of zero in on this Florida game here for a moment. And this is kind of what I'm leading to in the point that I want to make. And believe it or not, this is a little bit different kind of point than you probably heard me make in the past, because obviously we got Eddie, the blind squirrel, on the desk here. He is the official mascot of Dog Nation Daily. We have the golden shoe here in mockery of Marco Wilson and the thrown shoe against LSU for the big loss of the Gators a year ago. And we love mocking Florida. We love talking about Georgia beating up on those lousy, stinking Gators. It's something we look forward to every year. Obviously, we're massively disappointed by the fact that it did not happen last season. And, you know, to us, it's kind of red meat to give to our constituency just to talk bad about Florida and all things like that. But that doesn't mean that we don't, and in this case, we're maybe forced to take Florida seriously as an opponent for Georgia on October 30th of this year. As much as it pains me to admit, Florida did win that game a year ago. And as much as you may want to look and say, well, Kyle Pitts is gone now, and Kyle Trask is gone now, and, you know, Kadarius Toney's gone now, a lot is left, a lot is gone. There are a lot of talented players who've left the Florida program, a lot gone from that roster in 2020. It's important to note that Bill Conley still has Florida, even with all they've lost, as his preseason number 12 team. That's not as high as Georgia at number 6, but it's also not nothing either. So as someone who loves mocking Florida and who loves, you know, kind of taking shots at the Gators when I can, this is one of those moments where honesty compels me to admit, don't overlook that game on October 30th. Don't assume that's an easy win for Georgia just on the basis of what Florida lost. The analytics folks, the smart guys, the math guys are saying, no, we still have a little bit of respect for Florida. And you can be like me and say, well, I see a loss for Florida against Alabama. I think they might lose to LSU. I feel confident saying they're going to lose to Georgia. That's at least 3 losses right there. I see the same thing that you do on that. But the guys who crunch the numbers, the guys with the calculators, are saying at least take them seriously. At least be careful and at least keep that date circled on that October 30th calendar for Georgia and Florida. So that's my kind of warning to all of us around here there as well. When you look at the landscape for Georgia and the SEC East, and we're going to talk a little bit more about this on tomorrow's show as well, there's a lot about this 2021 schedule for Georgia and the SEC East that reminds you a little bit of the division that Kirby Smart first laid waste to back in 2017, with South Carolina very down, Tennessee very down right now, Kentucky still in my mind not very good, Missouri, you know, maybe that's one of the best of the rest type teams in the division, but Georgia handled them easily on the road in Columbia a year ago. This looks like an SEC East that's as easy to navigate as anything the Dogs have dealt with since Smart's second year back in 2017. But that doesn't mean the Florida game in Jacksonville is not still a challenge. Florida as a national championship contender for this upcoming season, as a real threat to Georgia to win the East, admittedly, I don't see it as so. But are they good enough that this still should be circled as a big game for the Dogs? Absolutely. And the fact that there's revenge on the line for UGA just makes it all the more so. We've always believed that Florida is Georgia's number one rival. We've always believed that's the game that ought to matter to Georgia fans more than any other. And in this year, maybe that's as true as it's ever been. Florida maybe not quite as good as it was a year ago, but still good enough to maybe get Georgia's attention. And certainly the Gators will get the Dogs' best shot there at the cocktail party. And I'm like you, I just simply can't wait to see it. My name's Brandon Adams, and this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans, presented today by Harris Cherokee Casino Resort. So good to have you with us, no matter how you get to us today, live on video, 10 a.m., Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, on the radio at noon, on Athens Sports Radio 960 The Ref, and we are available as a podcast wherever you find them. WorldFamousDogNation.com, Google, Spotify, everything else. All those various platforms, just really appreciate you making it all possible. And big thanks to our friends at Harris Cherokee Casino Resort. You know, this nice studio we get to broadcast from, all of the technical equipment, even when it works and when it doesn't, no matter what. We're very, very thankful to have all of this, and it's our friends at Harris Cherokee Casino Resort on this particular day that make it possible. You need a getaway. The properties there at Harris Cherokee Casino Resort are a great getaway for you. Just a two-hour drive from Atlanta, whether you're talking about the original Harris Cherokee Casino Resort property or the Harris Cherokee Valley River, unbelievable gourmet dining, luxurious shopping, a world-class spa experience, a completely reimagined gaming floor with social distancing, really paramount and top of mind, just making sure to take care of you from a health and safety standpoint. They take that really seriously at Harris Cherokee Casino Resort. The book, the sports book, is about to open. That's going to be so much fun. Sports wagering, just a two-hour drive from Atlanta there at Harris Cherokee Casino Resort. It's going to be amazing. To find out more about this and to really take advantage of the great offers and benefits they want to provide for you, the best way to do that is to become a Caesars Reward member. Go to Caesars.com/Harris-Cherokee for more info on that. That's Caesars.com/Harris-Cherokee. You can find a whole lot more about both the Harris Cherokee Casino Resort properties right there in Cherokee, North Carolina. All right, we're going to get Mike Griffith coming up in a moment. Our first chance to welcome back Mike for a while. He has been away from work for a couple of days, so no doubt he'll be chomping at the bit and raring to go. And let me also give you a little bit of a programming note here. I've been telling you about this for a couple of days. I want to make sure everybody's aware of this right now. This is the last live show we're going to do. And by live, I mean recorded live, because about 90-something percent of you, you know, listen after the live airing anyway. So, but this is the last show we're recording live for a couple of days here. Thursday, Friday, and then Monday are all pre-recorded shows. We've done those shows already. We'll be delivering those at the normal time. So if your radio, podcast, video, whenever you normally listen, the show should be there ready to go for you at that particular time. Really fun stuff. We're going to look a little deeper at a few of the Georgia position groups for the upcoming spring, kind of where things stand on that. I'm going to refute a little bit of a phony narrative that I think has kind of grown around Georgia. Just some real fun stuff. Extended recruiting conversation with Jeff Centel, which I think is going to be really good. So really fun stuff over the course of the next couple of days. On video, on Facebook, on podcast, on radio, pre-recorded Thursday, Friday, Monday, and then back to normal with everything kind of as you've come to expect it then on Tuesday. So if you normally watch on Facebook or YouTube, you can actually set a reminder to go ahead and watch those shows. I know some of you have complained about the lack of notifications lately on Facebook. You can actually set a reminder for yourself now for these pre-recorded shows and have those delivered to you on those platforms here over the course of the next couple of days. So we'll get ready to do that then. With that said, let me kind of transition here to Around the Doghouse here for a moment. And when Kirby Smart met with reporters last week to talk about kind of the conclusion to the 2021 recruiting cycle and kind of the current state of the program, one of the things that he did confirm, which had been out there on the internet for a while anyway, but the official date of G-Day and the expectations for Georgia when it comes to its spring practices. This is Kirby letting you know that they are all systems go for right now in the hopes that the virus and the health of our state will cooperate. This is Kirby Smart.
April 17th is slated to be G-Day. We don't have exact times and whether television is going to be involved in that and what our attendance policies are going to be, but we do have the date, and that date would be April 17th, as well as our spring dates of our 15 practices. So that part's set. We're always flexible in our practice dates based on weather or things that may change, but the G-Day date is pretty solid for us there.
So listening to Smart say this, I was looking a little bit here this morning. To the best I can tell, I think there are three SEC teams that have scheduled their spring games. There may be more. I can only find data on three. You got Georgia there on April 17th. You got South Carolina the following Saturday. And you've also got Texas A&M on that same April the 17th date. And Jimbo Fisher, when he met with reporters for National Signing Day last week, also talked about this. And he was discussing how, you know, listen, it's slated to kind of come a couple of days after what a lot of these college coaches are hoping will be an end to the NCAA-mandated dead period. We've had, you know, essentially no recruiting going on now for about a year, and there's a chance that may at least soften up coming April 15th. And Jimbo Fisher says, listen, we want to be able to have our spring game 2 days after that, doors open to welcome recruits, maybe welcoming fans there as well, and kind of creating that atmosphere. And obviously you would think that Kirby Smart's going to be much the same way, and I would imagine that most of the SEC will probably try to schedule their spring games in the hope that it can come after what the obviously the league hopes is a relaxation of the recruiting ban that's been put in place with the NCAA right now. Which, if you want to start looking ahead a little bit, and this is the kind of year, like the time of year, where a lot of folks do want to look ahead some. If you want to start looking ahead a bit to what might be next and what's coming down the pipe for Georgia, the rest of the SEC, the opening up of this dead period, the relaxation of that, the chance to recruit, maybe as soon as spring games. Obviously, Georgia just getting these practices in is going to be huge for the 2021 team on the field. But what's going to be just gigantic is the idea that you know, after an entire recruiting cycle that was essentially done through video teleconference, the fact that we may actually see some recruits getting to actually be a part of an atmosphere for G-Day, that fans might be invited for that as well. We could have the comparison of other spring games, maybe a lot of spring games taking place on that same day, and the discussion of which recruits are going to go where and who's going to be, you know, seen where and who's pulling out all the stops to get guys to come back to their campus. Boy, that could be a lot of fun. That's only a few weeks away here. So pretty interesting to see some of these spring dates starting to be scheduled, including Georgia's own G-Day, and an idea that maybe there could be some recruiting going on when that takes place. That is a lot of fun on the horizon. Great to have all of you with us here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Harris Cherokee Casino Resort. Wait till you hear the latest twist and turn in the Tennessee defensive coordinator search. This one's gotten really rough for the Vols. We'll have some fun with that before we're done on today's show. But for now, for everything going on around UGA, including, by the way, a big basketball game tonight, let's talk to Mike Griffith here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Harris Cherokee Casino Resort.
From Athens and across the SEC or wherever the recruiting trail may lead, here's a DogNation.com insider.
Well, so to Mike Griffith here. Good to have him back. Hope he had an enjoyable couple days off, a chance to relax, recharge the batteries a little bit, and get ready for what I was describing a moment ago is potentially a pretty busy spring. Mike, obviously the presence of spring practice will be huge for the Georgia players and coaches as you get ready for the start of the 2021 cycle. But if you could have some sort of relaxation of this NCAA dead period that's been in place for what seems like forever. April 15th is the date that could happen, leading into what could be some recruits there for G-Day, fans in the building too. Boy, that starts to feel like old times after a while, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does, B.A. You know, just getting guys back on campus would be big in terms of the recruiting. And like you said, the fans as well. And I'm not sure, you know, how relaxed the season's going to be compared to the regular season. I know that the COVID numbers are going in the right direction. Is more people have recovered from COVID. More people have been vaccinated. I think we're about at 20% of our United States population that's either had COVID and recovered or gotten the vaccination. So we've got a ways to go yet. I think that's the barometer for the attendance numbers. But to your point, the new normal does seem to be approaching us.
Yeah, and I don't want to get too deep in the weeds on this because at a certain point in time it becomes tedious. But the thought that I have, Mike, is that it seems fairly easy to social distance for a spring game because, let's face it, it's typically not a full stadium anyway. It has been for Georgia before, but that's not the typical mood around most college football programs. What I'd be very curious about is normally that's a free event. It's just open gates. Folks just kind of walk in and they just, you know, kind of sit where they're told. That's the part of it that would be kind of interesting to me of, well, how is it that you determine who gets to come and who doesn't? You know, normally it's just sort of a self-selection type thing. Some folks want to come, some folks don't. So you can socially distance inside the stadium fairly easy, but determining who actually gets access to the stadium and who doesn't, that's the part that would seem like a logistics challenge for me.
Yeah, that's a good question, B.A., and especially with Georgia looking at a $55 million shortfall in their budget, maybe this is the year they need to charge. You know, I'm not sure. I'm not propagating that as much as I'm suggesting it's a possibility when you look at where the budget's at right now after the COVID-19 restrictions of last year. I'm not really sure how that would go. Maybe it would go a lot like the tickets went with the boosters and the priorities and things like that. As you said, typically most stadiums don't fill up for spring games. Georgia's a little different. I don't think you'd be looking at a case where there'd be 92,000 Even if there was no COVID, I think that Georgia's been around 50 or 60,000, as I recall, coming off of seasons like this. So, you know, I do think that it's interesting to ask, though, how they would prioritize who gets in. The good news is it'll be televised regardless.
So on this show, we obviously make a big deal about being a show for fans. I always say with the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans, we don't really pretend to be objective, but when possible, I do try to be fair and balanced for fairness, if for no other reason. And fair and balanced today meant I had to admit that when you see the preseason projection come out from Bill Connelly, ESPN, with Georgia at number 6 in the SP Plus, with Florida at number 12, to me it serves as a reminder that, hey, you know, a lot of Georgia fans are expecting to kind of march into Jacksonville, get that revenge over Florida, and kind of expecting Georgia to be, you know, certainly the prohibitive favorite in the division. I don't think there's any doubt that's true. I think most of the preseason magazines and kind of preseason media chatter will certainly favor Georgia pretty heavily there. But in that one game scenario in Jacksonville, I think this analytics thing that came out yesterday that Connor Riley wrote about at DogNation.com, Mike, I do think that should serve as a little bit of a reminder to be careful, keep that game circled. You know, you may stomp through the rest of the division if you're Georgia, but that revenge game against Florida on October the 30th, that's still one that needs your full attention. That Florida may not quite be what they were perceived to be going into the game against Georgia a year ago, but they haven't fallen off so much that they aren't a team you should still take seriously. So a little bit of preseason chatter about that today probably, you know, requires me to say, hey, let's just make sure we keep that game circled in red ink coming up on October the 30th.
Well, I mean, it's a road game. It's in Jacksonville, Florida every year, and that's not an advantage for Georgia. You can argue whether it's an advantage for Florida or not. Some say it's not. Some say it is, depending on, you know, the crowd. But the travel away from Athens, no doubt, is tough. You know, oh, it's a short flight. Yeah, but it's also a bus ride to the airport. So that's always a little bit of a factor, B.A. And then the other factor that we saw this year is, hey, who's going to be healthy? Are you going to lose 4 guys to injury and have a team captain in a motorcycle wreck the week before? Because when that happens, bad things happen. Is your starting quarterback going to get injured with a 14-0 lead? Are your linebackers going to forget how to cover the wheel route? You know, there was a lot of meltdowns. That's still not a game Georgia should have lost last year. Georgia should have won that game. A completely healthy Georgia team with JT Daniels at quarterback probably wins that game by 2 to 3 touchdowns. And all you had to do is watch how LSU went through the swamp a couple weeks later, shorthanded, and beat Florida. So, to the point of, you know, metrics, I think metrics at this point are a bit of a hogwash because we don't know who's going to be healthy at that point. Now, if you tell me right now that JT Daniels is the starting quarterback, I feel really good about it. But if you tell me that Georgia's offensive line hasn't been able to protect or that JT hasn't learned to get rid of the ball quicker and he's injured and you're starting Brock Vandegrift or Stetson Bennett again, then I think there are concerns. But to me, a healthy Georgia team should win that game in the same fashion that Jake Fromm did his first couple years, and even beat him by a touchdown that last year.
So what you're talking about, I think, is interesting. And obviously, if you look at last year's game, it's pretty unusual to have that many guys off one defense who are injured. And listen, I'm the last person in the world to make excuses. Winners aren't whiners. I'm not going to whine about that. It's just what happened, and Georgia still lost the game. So I'm not using this as an excuse, but as you said, objectively speaking, there were a lot of key injuries that Georgia was dealing with defensively a year ago. That's a lot to overcome. But generally speaking, one of the reasons why I believe the Georgia program is on a higher plane than Florida's is, despite the fact that Florida won the game last year, is that I do think Georgia is in a better position to overcome kind of a normal amount of injuries. Because you're right, you project to October the 30th, one of the huge questions for any game like that would be, well, who's healthy enough to play and who's not? We should assume there will be some injuries on both sides. And because Georgia has recruited high school players as consistently as they have, CBS had a thing just this week over the course of the last 5 years, the average recruiting class for Georgia, number one in the country. That's not a bad thing. That's a good thing. Obviously, it's well ahead of Florida, who's just barely in the top 10. That overall program depth ought to give you the ability to overcome injuries in a way that if you've recruited less high school talent the way that Florida is, that you're obviously going to be a lot more susceptible to the individual injuries because you just don't have as much program depth.
Yeah, no, that's a fair point. Just last year was just curious, you know, because you were down to Stetson Bennett. You know, Kirby said himself he was the fourth string quarterback, a former walk-on. Dwan Mathis is there, and on paper he's a 4-star, but in reality he's a kid coming off brain surgery who's never even been through a spring practice session. So your options weren't as good there as maybe what you would have thought Georgia would have had with Jamie Newman transferring out. So that was a very unusual position to be low stocked on, and it ultimately cost Georgia in that Florida game. They had better quarterback play. You know, maybe if Stetson Bennett doesn't get injured, as again, remember, they're winning 14-0.
Yeah.
When Stetson Bennett suffers the shoulder injury 3 minutes into the game on that touchdown throw. Now, it's because he called the wrong protection, but still, you lost your starting quarterback and your backup was a guy that hadn't seen reps with the first team in weeks. And again, had never been through spring drills and, you know, had just been cleared from brain surgery, you know, 6 months earlier. So that's a tough 1-2 backup punch. You know, I don't think Georgia's ever going to get caught that dry at the quarterback position again. Even if it's Stetson Bennett 1 year later, he'll be better than he was, you know, in his first year as a starter. If something were to happen to JT and Stetson is still the number two guy, you know, I still think he'd be much better off than he was a year ago, having not gone through spring in a new offense. So I think where you get injured, you know, the year before we talked about the receivers, not only did Georgia lose five of their top six receivers in 2019, but that was the position group hit hardest by injuries.
Yeah.
They had, you know, six guys miss games due to injuries. So there has been some terribly bad luck. And luck is a part of it, as you said, winners aren't whiners. But when you're very shallow at a position as Georgia was at quarterback last year or at receiver the year before, and that's where you sustain injuries, you can get in trouble really fast.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting point. The point you bring up about wide receivers kind of brings you back to some of the Bill Connelly stuff from ESPN that I was talking about off the top of the program, that if you want to identify one area in which Georgia, at least on paper, seems to be in such better position than it was a year ago, it is with that wide receiver returning production. Whereas, you know, unfortunately, all the folks in 2019 who tried to tell us that was going to be a big deal for Georgia, turned out they were right. That was obviously a governor on the team's progress all year long. I won't deny that. In 2020, it started to get a little bit better. And obviously, when you look at what Georgia brings back for 2021, you know, George Pickens' junior season, knowing what you have a little bit in Jermaine Burton, hoping some of these other guys can kind of come back for injury, at least a little bit excited about the future of Arian Smith. I don't know that year over year there's any position group for Georgia that seems better on paper now than the way the wide receiver room has seemingly improved over the course of the last 12 months.
Well, that's fair, and I need to point out you used the word governor, so I think there's some NASCAR on your brain there. You're thinking about that restrictor plate race coming up at Daytona, PA.
That's exactly right, this weekend.
Split out. I'm starting to think about restrictor plate racing and the 20th anniversary of being down there in Daytona when the Intimidator crashed, and it was one of those deals when he crashed, you thought that you just didn't think that was going to be it for him. You know,
yeah.
You know, it's kind of like that, like I said, when Georgia loses players, you think, oh, you know, that's not going to – but to your point, you know, the wide receiver room is so – the passing game arguably is staged for its best year ever under Kirby Smart. Now, Joe Fromm was very good in 2018. Everybody, you know, forgets that. Everybody dismisses it. But if you go back and look at the numbers, Jake was fifth in the nation in pass efficiency at the end of that regular season. And he did have some NFL targets. Isaac Nauta was a seventh-round pick. And Riley Ridley has been a bit of a bust in the NFL, I would say. Mecole Hardman had some speed, but I think we'd all agree he really wasn't utilized to the maximum at Georgia as a receiver, although a very good return man while with the Bulldogs. And then, you know, Terry Godwin is a guy who's been kind of on squads. And, you know, so they had some NFL talent, albeit no superstars like Alabama and LSU had. And yet Jake was still in the top five in pass efficiency. I think you'll see JT in the top 10 in pass efficiency. I think you'll see some prolific numbers. I think you'll see a team that throws a higher degree of passes than runs, merely because that's what the talent enables you to do. Even though James Cook is a running back, and Kenny McIntosh is a running back, and Kendall Milton, those are all three guys with very good hands in the open field. So, and Darnell Washington is very special. So I do think, to your point, that the pass game, in addition to that receiver room, with Dominic Blaylock also coming back, is in much, much better shape than it's ever been during the Kirby Smart era. Now, that said, the offensive line, I still have some questions if they can reach what the Great Wall played at in 2018. I still have some questions about the backfield and if we'll see Kendall Milton or Britt McIntosh, you know, develop into that line of first and second round type of NFL picks. So the running game is not what it once was, but I do think this passing game has a very good chance to be prolific.
So speaking of the NFL draft, which you briefly mentioned there, let me transition to that topic for a moment, because I want to bring you in on something that I brought up on yesterday's show, and Connor Riley also kind of weighed in on at the time, that for me, when I look at, you know, kind of Georgia's overall program strength, kinds of things that can eventually lead to a national championship, I really feel this way, and I think you and I probably have talked about this before, because this has definitely been a hot topic for me for a while. That final frontier for Georgia is producing those multiple first-round picks every year with regularity. You go back and look at 2018 Clemson, the national champion. The following draft, they had three first-round picks. LSU the following year, the national champion, four first-round picks. Alabama, Mike, this season may have five first-round picks. National champions just have a multitude of first-round picks. It's one of the fundamentals that seems to suggest your status as a national championship contender. Georgia did have the couple last year with the offensive linemen, with Isaiah Wilson and Andrew Thomas. But to me, that's the final frontier for this program. It kind of remains to be seen if they'll have multiple first-round picks this year. Azeez Ojulari going to have a very good chance to be a first-round pick. And then you kind of wait and see whether a Tyson Campbell or maybe even possibly an Eric Stokes slips into the first round. But that to me is, if Georgia's going to achieve at the highest possible level it can, if it's going to match the kind of the program strength of a program like Alabama, Mike, to me, it's obvious that's the next step for this program to take.
Well, I mean, it's a simple formula. If you're winning with the number one class coming in or the number two class coming in, then you should probably be producing the number one or number two amount of draft picks going out. That didn't happen with this 2017 class. Now, maybe Richard LeCount would have been a first-round pick had he not gotten in the motorcycle accident. Maybe Tyson Campbell can be. He certainly won't be on the merits of his play last year. He didn't play like a first-rounder. He might measure out as one in terms of his height and weight and wingspan and 40 time, but you didn't get first-round production from him in the field last year. Eric Stokes, I think you could make a case, had first-round production. Azeez Ojulari, absolutely. Zamir White has not been the five-star who's gone pro early and will be a first-round pick, you know, because of the knee injuries. So that does hurt you a bit there. Trey Hill probably doesn't look like a first. Ben Cleveland is considered one of the top five interior linemen, but not a first-round pick. So to your point, can they turn into this next season? As I go down the list, BA, if JT Daniels has the sort of year that we think he'll have, he's got a chance to be a first-round pick. George Pickens, certainly a first-round pick. Jordan Davis, certainly a first-round pick. Now, what about N'Kobe Dean? What about Lewis Cain? Are we missing anybody out of that equation that could be first-round picks that we haven't discussed yet? I'm not sure, but are three or four going to be enough? I'm not really certain on that. Maybe Jamari Salyer slips into that discussion. He's a guard, not a tackle anymore. So I think you bring up a good point. I think the 2017 class, you know, for all the flair and all the push, I don't think it panned out to the extent that we thought it would when that was the number one or two class, as I recall.
Yeah, 17 was number three ranked. 2018, which Zamir White and Tyson Campbell were a part of, and Azeez Ojulari as well, that was Georgia's first number one class under Kirby Smart, was 2018. The 2017 class finished number three overall, according to the 24/7 Sports composite team ranking.
Yeah, the sad part, you know, like I said, I really believe Richard LeCount was playing like a first-round pick before the motorcycle accident. I look at a guy, you know, you just look at the injuries that players have had, you know, Zamir White with the knee injuries, you kind of wonder what could have been, what would have been. Trey McKitty, maybe an underused guy last year that, you know, maybe Georgia could have got more out of. I guess what I'm building up to here, and, you know, I hate to say it, but I don't think Georgia's gotten everything out of their talent last season, whether it was because of injuries, coaching changes, scheme-age. I think last season, you know, wasn't Kirby's best, right? 2017 was fantastic. 2018, they were on the verge. I'll always believe they got ripped off by the Georgia Tech, Florida, and Oklahoma AD being on that selection panel. I go back, and it's not quite as bad as the 1997 Heisman Trophy with Peyton Manning, Charles Woodson, but sometimes the best don't win. We'll say that. 2019, there was a lot to overcome. There were a lot of losses. In 2020, we'll always wonder what could have been with the quarterback position, to be fair. They were beating Alabama at halftime 24-20, and they were beating Florida 14-0 with a healthy quarterback. So those are the two games that got away. I think this year they'll be. I really do believe this year they're set up well. If there's going to be a position of need, if there's going to be a position where you need to grow as the season progresses,
I think defensive back might as well be that spot. One, because the head coach oversees it. I really like this hire with Jamal Adai. And two, Alabama showed this last year. You can grow on the back end as the season progresses, provided that your offense is moving the ball and scoring points, one, and two, that your front seven gets the job done. And I think if there's one thing you and I both agree on, it's that defensive front that Georgia has.
Yeah.
I'm talking about the down. That's a championship quality interior defensive line and pass rush on the perimeter, I believe.
No, I think you're right, and I certainly hope that's the case because that could be the real engine for Georgia this upcoming season. Mike, one more thing before I let you go, and I am legitimately excited about this. To quote Michael Scott from The Office, I am definitely ready to get hurt again when it comes to Georgia basketball tonight, having won three straight in the SEC. A very difficult stretch of schedule now upcoming, which begins in Thompson Bowling Arena tonight against the Tennessee Vols. Vols have a high ranking, but they've shown some vulnerability this year. My expectations, I guess, admittedly, are fairly low, but I am looking forward to the game. How do you handicap this one, Georgia going on the road? You win a fourth straight SEC game, find a way to get it done in a tough gym like Knoxville against these Vols. Boy, you talk about, you know, moving from having your curiosity to having your attention. That would definitely be a big, big step towards that.
Well, it would be a big step. But it's, you know, I mean, this is a Tennessee team that beat Kansas by about 20 points, you know, not too long ago. And, yeah, they've had some down nights, but they've been their own worst enemy. The issue is simple. Georgia, unlike, very, very unlike Georgia football, this is a program with not much margin. This would be, if Georgia basketball were to go into Tennessee and beat Tennessee tonight, it would be the equivalent of when South Carolina came into Georgia 2 years ago and upset the Bulldogs. That's how much of an upset it would
be. Well, now, hold on now. Georgia's not – I mean, I don't know what the point spread is, but Georgia's not that big. I mean, South Carolina was a 20-something point underdog when they came to Athens. Georgia's not that big of an underdog tonight, are they?
Well, in realistic, you know, I don't know what the spread is based on what people think. And, you know, you look and it says Georgia's won five out of their last seven, and that's impressive. But I'm just telling you, based on what Tennessee has from talent, length, depth, home court advantage. I mean, you got to remember the last time Georgia went up there, they lost by more than 40 points.
Yeah.
Now, last year, Georgia beat Tennessee. And one of the great statistics for Georgia fans to throw out to those boisterous Vol fans, one of the most remarkable, I might have even mentioned on the show before. Do you know that Tennessee basketball has not won in Athens since Bruce Pearl was their head coach?
Very interesting.
That's a fascinating statistic, that Tennessee hasn't won here since at least 2011. But up in Knoxville, different story. They're coming off a big win over Kentucky, a program they love to beat. Confidence, they came from behind in the second half. Two freshmen stepped up and played phenomenal. They didn't even have their two best players playing well, Fulkerson and Pond. So I'm telling you, this is a mismatch. It's not a good matchup for Georgia. It's a game they'll probably lose by double digits. And yet and still, I think Tom Crean is doing a good job with this team because they're being the best they can be. They're finding roles. Guys are stepping up. Sevier Wheeler is a dynamic point guard. He does a great job. But the Bulldogs have to shoot well to win games. And you just can't ask them to keep shooting 55% from the floor and over 40% from three. Eventually, those numbers even out. As bad as they've shot before, now they're shooting well. I'm not telling you that an upset can't happen. I'm just telling you it's very unlikely because when you look on the floor at the matchups, it's really hard to see where Georgia has an advantage over Tennessee. And you're on the road. And Rick Barnes gets calls. I've seen it. He has a little system where he'll tape up the faces and the names of the referees for every game so he can call them by name, and he's been doing this every year. So now these referees think Rick Barnes is on a first-name basis with them. You know, it doesn't work in the NCAA tournament, obviously. He hasn't gotten past the Sweet 16. But this was the team that was picked to win the regular season in the SEC. So I guess what I'm saying is don't pin all your hopes on this game. You know, Georgia's got to play four consecutive ranked teams now, and we're going to find out a lot about them. And if Georgia can win one of those games, that'd be okay. If they win two of those games, that would be great. But this first one up in Knoxville, the game that Tennessee's coming off of, the matchups, the revenge factor, you know, Georgia really put it on Tennessee last year in Athens. I think that's too much. I could be wrong. They could certainly win. But when I look at what Georgia has, they've got one guy. They got one legitimate big in Tumani Kamara. And if Tumani gets in foul trouble, they're sunk. I mean, it's that simple. When you play Georgia, you know, you get Tumani in foul trouble. But, you know, Tumani Kamara has the same kind of ring to it as Hakuna Matata. What is that? Is it, what is that from The Lion King?
I don't know.
Hakuna, what is it?
Mike, just like that. There goes Mike's excitement for the game.
No worries, right? What is it called? It's Hakuna Matata, right?
Sure,
I always
sure.
think of that when I think of Tumani Kamara. Now, he's from Belgium. It has nothing to do with The Lion King. But I always think to myself, when Tumani's in the game, it means no worries. But when he's out of the game, there are a lot of worries. So keep an eye on Tumani Kamara's foul trouble is what I'm saying.
Well, there you go, Mike. It's good to have you back on the show. Thank you so much for your time. Look forward to reading you here at DogNation.com, including some coverage of the game tonight up there in Knoxville. We appreciate it. We'll see you soon here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Harris Cherokee Casino Resort.
Hakuna Matata.
There you
Hakuna
go.
Hakuna Matata, DJ. No
go.
Worries.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
Boy, Mike kind of turned into Dan Dockett there for Monday. He started giving me names of the Tennessee players. I think he went on for about 3 minutes on the basketball game tonight. Pretty impressive basketball rant there from Mike. But I'll just point out here for a moment a couple things. First of all, don't even get me started on Rick Barnes as a coach for Tennessee. He had Kevin Durant on his team. Couldn't even get out of the first round of the NCAA tournament. Or certainly didn't make Sweet 16. He's done less with more than just about anybody in college basketball. And by the way, you know, this is I don't mean to do transitive property here on you, but this is a Tennessee team that struggled with Ole Miss of the day. Georgia beat Ole Miss twice. So, I mean, you know, I got my eye on this one tonight. We'll see how it goes. I don't expect much, but I am certainly looking forward to the possibility of that. By the way, I think we kind of got all of Mike's, if you're doing QAnon conspiracy bingo, I think we got all of Mike's there in one interview. He gave us conspiracy about Georgia going to Jacksonville. He gave us one that I had not heard before, Rick Barnes' college basketball officials conspiracy. That was a fun one. He also gave us, which is really off the Greatest Hits album, college football playoff selection committee conspiracy. It's really one of my favorites. So we got all of that. It was very nice. Very nice little run there from Mr. Griffith. He had not been with us for a while, so he was chomping at the bit to get going there. As we transition to our SEC through, by the way, speaking of Tennessee, fascinating. The defensive coordinator search has really taken a turn for the worst. And if you're a Georgia fan, you love every minute of this. We told you yesterday, update on a previous story, to go to my news man voice here for a moment, that they had zeroed in on Al Washington, linebackers coach from Ohio State, potentially as their next defensive coordinator. But Jimmy Hyams, friend of the show, Jimmy's been with us before, a longtime ubiquitous presence around Knoxville, Tennessee, says that Tennessee's actually offered Blake Baker the job. Baker, you may or may not know, was Miami defensive coordinator up until the point in time that he wasn't. Baker had his responsibilities taken from him by Miami head coach Manny Diaz, so much so that Baker left Miami of his own volition. He's actually on his way to be LSU's linebackers coach. So he left a place in Miami in which he was defensive coordinator in name only after having play calling duties stripped from him from Manny Diaz to go to LSU. Why did he get them stripped from him at Miami? Well, how about this? At one point this season, they gave up 554 yards rushing to North Carolina. That's how bad it was defensively for Baker. But apparently the Vols say, hey, all is forgiven. Fresh start here in Tennessee. According to Jimmy Hyams, it's Baker, the current LSU linebackers coach, former failed defensive coordinator at Miami, who is in line to be Tennessee defensive coordinator, according to Jimmy Hyams. I thought there was a really good point made by a guy named Dave Bartu, who is known as the College Football Matrix. He has the website CFB Matrix. That according to his analytics work, we've had a lot of analytics in the program, I realize that today, but according to Bartu's analytics work, that the biggest problem for Baker, and this is actually a serious point, is that it seems like he just was not a good pairing for the Rhett Lashley up-tempo offense that Miami actually had really good success with. Lashley has rejuvenated his career as Miami offensive coordinator. You'll remember him kind of butting heads with Gus Malzahn at Auburn years ago, but Lashley now at Auburn, I should say at Miami, has kind of rejuvenated his career. And according to Bartu, looking at the numbers, that a guy like Baker just had a hard time playing defense with an offense that wanted to play as fast as Lashley wanted to play there in Miami, and it just wasn't a good pairing. Now, the obvious issue here is that Josh Heupel also runs a similar kind of offense, at least in terms of pace of play. Not necessarily similar in terms of offensive scheme, probably pretty different for Heupel and Lashley. Lashley likes running the football more. But when it comes to, you know, the overall pace of play, Heupel definitely wants to play up-tempo, and that's the kind of thing that Bartu, which I thought was really interesting on Twitter, saying that's been an issue for Baker in the past. So, listen, we joke about this. We obviously love mocking Tennessee in their struggles, but the truth is hiring a good defensive coordinator, hiring a good coordinator on either side of the ball is not an easy thing to do. I'm not quite so sure it's as difficult as Josh Heupel has made it look thus far, but it's not easy for anyone. Let me transition to this. Did you see where Florida and Notre Dame have now scheduled a home-and-home? 2031, 2032 are the dates. Florida's actually got a number of these non-conference series coming up. And, you know, there's a lot of talk in the SEC sometimes about copying, who's copying whom. You'll remember that Alabama thought Georgia copied it with its LED lights, as silly as all of that was. And most of the time, you know, the notion of somebody copying somebody else is not an easy thing to define. In this case, though, it is obvious. When Georgia started scheduling all of its non-conference series, you've got Oklahoma coming up 2 years from now, and Georgia's going to Ohio State and Texas and everywhere like that, UCLA on the docket. When Georgia started scheduling all these series, nobody was doing this at all. And since Georgia got these scheduled, including going to Notre Dame in 2017, bringing the Irish to Athens in 2019, since all of that started happening, you've had all of these programs. Alabama has jumped on the board, essentially scheduling most of the same teams that Georgia scheduled. Florida now, and you can go back and look at the history of all this. Florida every now and then will play Miami. There was that one time a couple of years ago they played Michigan. Other than that, in my lifetime, Florida plays nobody other than obviously the state-mandated game against Florida State. That's a state law in the Sunshine State. Other than that, Florida plays nobody in non-conference. None of these week one, week two matchups that most programs are a part of. Florida's just not a part of those things at all. And yet now they kind of see the direction, the trend the sport is moving, and they obviously want to make sure they get aboard that train there as well. This is clearly one that Georgia started. This is clearly one that Kirby Smart himself, because anybody around Georgia will tell you it was Smart himself who kind of push Georgia in the direction of these really tough non-conference schedules, and now the rest of the sport is following. I'm not so sure it's a good idea in terms of playoff position, because simply put, the only thing the playoff committee seems to care about is how few losses you have, not how many good wins you have. But it's great for the sport from an entertainment standpoint, and now even Florida, who's had to be dragged kicking and screaming into this kind of stuff, all of a sudden they're doing some of this now themselves. Kind of an interesting trend to pay attention to. We'll make that your SEC through. So last show for me for a while, at least in terms of a live show. Let me make sure I'm very clear about that. Dog Nation Daily, presented by Harris Cherokee Casino Resort, shows up pre-recorded for you no matter which platform you come to. Thursday, Friday, again on Monday. I will see you back here on Tuesday in kind of our normal situation after that. So fun few days of shows coming up. Certainly really appreciate you being a part of that. So let me do one more Golden Shoe before I get ready to get out of here. We obviously love doing this as a way of just really honoring those of you who love hating on the Gators. It's our Gator Hater Roll Call. Shout out to our buddy Mad Dog, who's giving you another one of these. Todd Munkin with the Gator. Very good-looking Photoshop by Mad Dog there. He says, offense plans to exploit third and Grantham this October 30th. Unfinished business, Golden Shoe. Nice job by Mad Dog. He's a multi-time winner. By the way, Gator Hater Countdown. Georgia looking to be a multi-time winner against Florida as well. How many days? 262. We will see you tomorrow, Dog Nation Daily, presented by Harris Cherokee Casino Resort.